Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Hey, Sox fans, welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, I'm Nick Borowski. This is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, doing it live every Sunday night on the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Thank you so much for everybody jumping in, spending some time with us. You can find the audio absolutely everywhere as spring training is essentially wrapped up in terms of games. We've got some days to kind of chop up here what Pedro Grifol is giving us and some of the names that have been leaked in terms of cuts, who has made the team. Is opening day is Thursday against the Detroit Tigers. Pat Hester is on assignment, and I am lucky to have Steve Hassman. You know him as Sleepy Harold on Twitter X, a contributor for Future Sox. He's going to be with us all episode long. Steve, a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nick. It's a pleasure to join you this fine, windy Sunday evening.
Right. It's you know, this is the time right now where people start looking at, like, the, you know, their weather app or whatever they've got. And folks have been probably tracking this for several days, if not week plus. And it's looking pretty nice for Thursday. You and I are going to be there for the home opener, as are a bunch of other Future Sox contributors. And I know so many other people making their plans, but as you pointed out before we started recording, and so many others have realized, there are a lot of seats still available.
Yes, there are. I mean, from my rough estimation of the eye test, as most people are very fond of, it's looking like half-ish still available. Wow. I mean, give or take, you know, some depletion here and there, but like, way more than it should be the week of opening day for what you would expect for baseball. So that kind of, it was jarring, at least nonetheless, for me.
When I saw some of those visuals pop up this past week of people kind of posting or whatever of what they were seeing when they were going to buy tickets and how many options they had, how many few seats were already claimed. I mean, I get it, right? I think we all get it. This, I believe, will be one of the lowest attended seasons in maybe 20 plus years. I think they might hit 1.59, which takes them beneath that 2018 season where they lost 100 games. But usually opening day, it's like, hey, all right, that's like a holiday. You know, everybody gets together. They meet up, family, friends, other Sox fans in their life that, you know, that everybody's been hibernation for the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. We get together on opening day, pack lot B and everywhere else. And then you'll see Saturday and Sunday and the rest of April, you know, nobody show up. So, man, I'm shocked by that.
Yeah, I know. But it kind of really lends like a clearer view into, I think, like even what we were discussing right before we jumped on, like how this fan base is really feeling, not necessarily, I would say, towards the players themselves or like the team, but like the organization as a whole. Like everyone just is a lot of people, fans, are just beat down by just what we've been through, like in our tenure as fans of this team, this organization.
Yeah. I want to talk about that a little bit more. I want to say hello to Sydney, Brian, Danny, Scott, Peyton. Thank you so much for jumping in the comments and checking in here as we do this show live on Sundays on the GGTB YouTube channel. Excitement. You know, it sounds like they're going with a slogan, better at the ballpark. At least that's kind of what the great Brooks Boyer spoke of at Media Day. And then I saw some images of some banners hanging on that catwalk going over 35th Street as you go kind of from Lot B and Shy Sox Bar Grill, the Depot. You walk over You get into the ballpark, and there's usually a banner with a collection of players and whatever, you know, the slogan is going to be. Better at the ballpark seems to be what they're going with. And I think they're really going to push that. Hey, we kind of know the team's going to be bad, but there are certain things that you can only get at the ballpark, especially food, drink, camaraderie, seeing live baseball. I mean, does that pull on your heartstrings as a fan and say, yeah, they're going to be bad, but you know what? I just got to be there and I've got to see this live.
Me, yeah, to a point. Like, I would consider myself at this a white side, you know, just like a masochist, because I've been doing this to myself for years, and I like going to games. Like, I like being outside in the summer, watching baseball, like hanging with my friends, just taking it in. And I've been to plenty of bad baseball games. I worked for a minor league baseball team, and that's plenty of bad baseball over my life. You know, you get used to things like that. So the slogan of, you know, better at the ballpark, I've seen that pumped around downtown as well when I'm heading to the office. I'm like, oh, I guess that's the direction we're going. Not, you know, not solely focusing on certain players or change the game or whatever. It's now better at the ballpark. And, you know, I will say there's some of the points you touched on with the camaraderie, just the people you meet and hang out with and see, or the vendors you befriend from time and time again, that all makes sense and checks out for me. I could see how for me that I would say, yeah, this is the experience is better at the ballpark. But for a lot of people, given the circumstance of the team, the org, how it's been operating, I could see where they come from and say, like, no, it's better at home from my couch where I'm saving money. So yeah. You know, I totally get that angle, yeah, and that approach as well. How about what's your take on this?
You know, I'll watch 150 plus games this year. You know, it's easier to consume baseball than it was way back when. So if you're out of the house or, you know, whatever you're doing, you could still check in and you could still watch and stay connected. And you go back and, you know, I'll watch encores. If I perhaps missed a day game or something, I'll watch it at night. You know, I'll record them, you know, and have that, you know, ability to at least, like, you know, see some of the stuff I might have missed that I heard about it. So I'll stay connected. You know, it's like a second language, you know, White Sox baseball. It's like how I communicate with, you know, family. You know, we might not talk about anything else, but, like, we'll talk about White Sox baseball and we can get right into whatever's going on, good or bad. Same thing with friends. You know, I might not see some, you know, friends throughout the year, but it's like I've got those Sox friends, as a lot of people have. So specifically opening day, I'm excited about. You know, I'm really excited to see some people I haven't seen in a while, walk through the parking lots, get there early, check in with some folks, and it feels like a holiday for me. Now, I have not bought any other, I haven't bought any more, you know, season single game tickets throughout the year. I've got my eye on a few and, you know, I've got kind of a plan in place of how I want to go back. But this is kind of uncharted territory for me, where it's not like I don't have, you know, tickets ready to go. Like, I don't know what my next game is going to be after opening day. And there's a lot of different reasons for it. But, you know, I am just really, really fed up, I think, with just the, you know, the organization, fan connection. I just feel like as fans have just been kind of getting slapped around and just said, you know, tough. If you don't like what's going on, deal with it. Because what else are you going to do? You know, there's not an Oak Lawn Chicago White Sox. There's not a Tinley Park White Sox. Like, we are the only White Sox. We're the only Southside team. So what else are you going to do? And that just kind of, it's rubbed me the wrong way a little bit of how there just seems to be a disconnect. But I absolutely love being there, you know, live baseball. You know, it's different than TV. Like, you get to see absolutely everything happening at all times. You know, you get that on a basketball game. We're all watching March Madness right now. You can see everything happening, you know, so that's where being in person and then just meeting up with the people that you have in your life. And, you know, that's like, that's the soundtrack of people's summers. That's their way of, you know, spending a Saturday or a Sunday with people. So I completely get that. And I'm sure I'll be there more than I probably realized going into the season. But right now, it's just got a different feeling than from previous years.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree. I think for me, one of the bigger aspects, I'm like, why I chose to stick out our season tickets is just I like the certainty of knowing dates in advance, especially with a couple of young kids now. It's a lot. I can't just go out on a whim on a Tuesday night and just really be like, hey, all right, you know, tickets are $3. I'm going to go to this game. It's a lot harder. So like having the dates set far in advance, I can go through, relay it to my wife and like, these are the dates. These are what we have. Some aren't going to work. That's just kind of, that's just part of the package for me. Like, you know, some can't go to all 20 or whatever it is, but you know, knowing what's there and then kind of working around it or having other schedules work around it is kind of what I've at least been doing, and it works well. But I mean, like I said, like we have people in our group that bailed. I totally get it. I know you mentioned that you dropped yours. Yeah. Several other people have as well. I don't blame them at all. I just, you know, it's, you guys got more cojones than I do to really do
it's
it.
It's a prove it year for me. It's like, prove it to me. You talk about a lot of different things. Getz had a real doozy of a quote this Sunday afternoon that, you know, I will refer back to on as the team plays this year. Speaking of baseball IQ and how well things have been going and like how we're positioned as a team for this year. And those are wonderful things to say. That's great. Show me that you've got a direction, that you know what you're doing, that this time it's going to be different. That's going to take a little bit of time, I know, to really show me, because it's going to have to bleed into the off season. But I got to see a better brand of baseball. And I honestly, personally, I don't think it's going to happen with Pedro Grifol as the manager, but that's what we've got. Maybe it works a little bit better with Chris Getz as the GM and Barfield brought in and Bannister and some other, you know, moves that were made. I'm just trying to spin it in some way possible to wrap my brain around. But it's the players, right? Ultimately, it's how this team was compiled. And we still don't know, you know, what it's going to look like against the Tigers on opening day on Thursday. We got a little bit of insight into that. Cuts were made to Jesse Chavez. I don't think there's any surprise there. Mike Moustakas, the moose was loose. TWTW gamer. I mean, the guy that was going to help this clubhouse, the chemistry gone. Baroa optioned. Tuki Toussaint, who maybe at the end of the season, last season, I thought, okay, this guy could be in the starting rotation as I looked at what our arms were going to be like. And then obviously after, you know, Cease and Kopech being demoted to the or promoted, maybe he looks at it as a promotion to the bullpen. I don't know with the way he was throwing 101 miles per hour, but I thought maybe Tuki, but he has not pitched well at all this spring. There's been some other arms that emerged. Tuki was DFA'd and Pilar, a guy that also a gamer, a TW guy. He was let go, told, hey, shop around. And then he was brought back the next day, and it was really a financial move, as I believe they brought him back, probably saved a few pennies doing that. That was a baseball move. I mean, it was like, I'm not going to overanalyze that move. Yeah. It was a baseball move made by a baseball team, but he gives you some outfield depth. So of that kind of collection, Steve, any surprises, anything, you know, that's worth commenting on that the Sox did or didn't do?
I mean, like the cutting of they telegraphed that they were going to do this like early in the offseason, even like before spring training, was that Oscar Colas was going to go back to Charlotte. They said he needs more time. Chris Guest mentioned that. He might even said it during the winter meetings. Like, it was very early that they needed a right fielder. But he was, if I recall correctly, one of the first cuts in camp. Like, within a week, you know, he would just, all right, gone, reassigned to minor league camp. Not that it was surprising. We knew he really had no shot, but to not let him hang around, even before, you know, sending some lower level minor league guys that they would just invite, you know, because that was just surprising to me as to how fast they just said, no chance, like, you have zero opportunity to make this club.
Right.
Which was just kind of like, it was like jarring. It was just like, okay, like, you really are trying to send this message that you have, you know, pack your bags, you're going to Charlotte, buddy. Like, you think he got
it? I mean, I don't want to cut you off, but I think that's something to like expand on, and I want to get your take. Will we see Oscar Colas really get a fair shot? Has the organization seen everything they need to see out of him as a person, as a ball player, and they have already figured it out that he is not somebody that's got a future? Or do you think they're going to be patient with him and he just needs some more maturation and obviously figure out some things baseball wise?
I think they're going to say that. I mean, it seems pretty apparent they couldn't get rid of the guy fast enough. You know, to me, like, it was from him. Just think about where we are last year.
Yeah,
he is the right fielder, had a good camp, you know, talked about highly with what he was doing in the offseason, and comes up, you know, he struggled. He was bad, and there's no really getting around it, and then came back up, was bad, and then sent down and never to be seen again. I mean, just like the mental errors, you know, I mean, he is young, you know, he's a young player. And I mean, he was in the minor leagues of Japan. So it's not like he needed some time to adapt, but just the skill set from just watching, because I remember even watching like what he was doing in the minor leagues in Birmingham, and just the defensive miscues were like, it didn't track like for why this was happening now, like where his head was at. So I get them sending this message, but it seems like they don't care if they ever see him back up. Like, Pedro seems to not like him. I mean, for how hard he was on him last year, mm-hmm. with just the quotes and, you know, going at Colas for all his mistakes or errors in the field, whereas the veterans on the team were never spoken about, you know, no ill will towards them. I mean, they were more established and had a track record, sure. But still, like, if you're calling out one, you know, for your team that's vastly underperforming, nobody should be safe at that point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it just seems to me at this point that if Colas has, you know, a very good rebound campaign in Charlotte, and if Dominic Fletcher isn't doing so hot, and if Robbie Grossman is not doing hot down in Charlotte, and if Kevin Pillar isn't doing hot, like, maybe they break Oscar Colas' glass.
If these five things don't work out, you like, might get an opportunity.
You might. Like, that's, you know, I don't, yeah. I think
about
they,
that.
I know, I think they would more likely try to just like trade him somewhere else and get a lottery ticket reliever over giving him another shot. It just seems like they really just, the shine wore off that real quick, and they were just over it.
Yeah, that is fascinating. You bring up a great point. I mean, he had the banner up along 35th Street, broke with camp, did himself well in spring, did not start opening day, but obviously got a lot of playing time in right field during the early part. And wow, things got weird and wild for him in a lot of different ways. And something that Pat and I talked about, I think it was last week, and it seemed like the same things were happening, or at least they saw as an organization the same things. So who is helping him develop? Like, who is in charge of making sure the same mistakes aren't being made, that he knows what he needs to be working on? Or maybe he does know and he just can't do it. I'm not sure. We'll talk a little bit of bench here, Steve, and a big welcome to Greg and Ian jumping in here, doing this live Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Appreciate you subscribing and passing it along to Sox fans in your life. So bench, Shoemake, here's a guy that did something to his ankle recently, and he might have been on the shelf 2 to 4 weeks. Talk about a gamer. Talk about TWTW. He's back in the lineup playing already. A guy that I thought was, headed towards making the roster, and it sure seems like they're going to, make sure that happens. Gavin Sheets, I think he's making the team. Stassi, of course, is your backup catcher. And then you've got Pilar, I think, in this bounce back. What about that motley crew of utility guys?
Yeah, that's quite the bench they've assembled there. I did see that Stassi may actually
open
season on the IL. So yes, then Corey Lee. Yep. So whatever, however that's
another Pedro out, favorite. Yeah.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Of course. So, Maldonado's getting ground into dust for that first, however long Stassi's out. But the bench, it seems Gavin Sheets is just, immovable force that will not leave the White Sox bench. Puts up big springs and then is relegated to emergency outfield duty, I guess, which I never want to see him play in the outfield.
Thank you. All right.
I guess he's going to have to, maybe. But if he wants to keep hitting like how he's hitting in Arizona, like that'll play. Like it will find a spot for you. But, just the defensive non-versatility of a first baseman DH type on the bench is
it just doesn't seem choice. Like he's a guy. It is a choice. It's a clear choice. And it doesn't seem like he fits just the way Getz and Grifol have talked about wanting to develop a roster, a team with speed and, versatility. And I guess you need that slugging bat if it can play, in the regular season. I guess we'll find out. I really thought his time was done, but here we go. Sheets 2024, the campaign.
Yeah. And it's going to be a very light hitting, it seems, bench. Shoemake hasn't hit in the minors. And I guess it's better that he's healthy. He's on the 40 man. So it was kind of a make or break type season for him, it seemed. So him showing the ability, at least he's one of that fits the mold that you were talking about with Getz and Pedro, that is versatile, can play all over. The bat is in question, but that's kind of what they built this team to be, is guys that can pick it and aren't going to embarrass you defensively. And if they run into the ball with the bat, like, great. Sheets is obviously the outlier there. The bench will be... Yeah, Moose getting cut was kind of like the big shock. It's like, I really thought just the Royal connection was...
I thought that was going to happen, yeah.
I know. I thought it was going to power right through, because at least he could play third base, can play first, I guess, and has played second poorly, but done it, whereas Sheets has played the outfield poorly and first. So, it's just a lot.
And I thought Danny Mendick too, just because he could play a bunch of different positions, obviously I'm not saying he's gold glove, not even close, but like he can. And in a season where that's what they need, or just guys to be able to play a bunch of different positions, he brings that. Now we might not see the end of Danny Mendick. I don't know. Depending on what kind of injuries or what happens, this team could look very different in the next few weeks or month or so. But it sounds like that's, you know, what they're going with right now. Shoemake, you know, Sheets, Stassi, Pilar. Now, Robbie Grossman, we mentioned his name, and, you know, he was brought on just a couple days ago. What do you make of that? That was kind of like a Hail Mary desperation. Hey, let's bring more people in instead of cut anybody.
Yeah, so to me, the Robbie Grossman move, he seems so like, whereas Pilar is more of like the defense speed factor, used to hit a bit more, doesn't really hit as well now. Grossman is sort of the opposite, where he doesn't really field well, but is better. Like, he's good against the left-handed pitching, which Pilar is pretty pretty solid as well, but not nearly as good as Grossman. He's more of the offensive Pilar. I mean, which if you could mash them both into like one player, it'd be pretty solid. But I think it's just kind of like a emergency case for if something were to happen with Pilar, maybe, or if Fletcher proves he needs a bit more time in Charlotte, they can kind of boost Grossman up, you know, again, not wanting to bring Colas anywhere near Chicago, or having Sheets play in the outfield for an extended period of time. I think Robbie Grossman seems to be like a cheap depth. Hey, if plan A and B doesn't work out, here's C, D, whichever on the pecking order you want it. Wanted to go.
I got a feeling Grossman was brought in just so they had an extra layer of protection against Colas. You know, here is, well, no. We also have Grossman, you know, so yes, mm-hmm. we've gone through these guys, but we've also got to check out Grossman.
We haven't tried him yet.
Even think about Colas again. Maybe it amounts to something. I think Pedro had some kind words to say about Grossman. He's a winner and all of this stuff. Over 420 plate appearances for the World Series champion Rangers in 2023. So there you go. Speaking of prospects and such, and you know, I veer towards, you know, you, Ian Eskridge, James Fox, Danny Miller, folks that follow this much more closely than I do. What happened to Lenin Sosa, Popeye Rodriguez? Like, what's going on with these guys?
For Sosa, it seems that Pedro wasn't much of a fan of him. Mm. At least didn't really seem to get much of an opportunity. Like the first few times he got called up, or first couple. And then at the end, he wasn't great, but with Lenin, at least throughout his journey in the minor leagues, it always took him time to adapt to a new level. He was always promoted aggressively, so he was always much younger than the competition, and it took him a little time to adjust. I don't know if there was any sort of lingering injury issue or something he was dealing with last year. It seemed that he started out hot in Charlotte, got promoted, went back down, was kind of okay, got, you know, promoted back down. He never really like found his stride again. Popeye Jose Rodriguez started the season recovering from a broken hamate. He was on an absolute heater to end 2022 and was really like vaulting up rankings and such with, you know, he was a bat first guy and aggressive, but he was hitting. And then broken hamate, end of the season, started off in a rut and just kind of never really got going again until later on. But they never, you know, he got his pinch running cup of coffee and never got into a game because, you know, whatever, the team was 10 games under. Why not play him once? I, you know, whatever. I'm not a major league manager. But
you can be, though, honestly.
I guess. So, but it seems like there's kind of even a breaking point with this, is they have, you know, now Shoemake, Sosa, Rodriguez, Nicky Lopez, you know, Danny Mendick, kind of all vying for these positions, and, you know, only so many 40-man spots you can give to utility, second baseman, shortstop, you know, type infielders. I think I would like to see Jose Rodriguez actually get more of an opportunity, but the thing for him, at least in my eyes, I'm sure Ian may agree, is that him starting a season healthy and getting off to a good start again, showing that 2022 like wasn't fluky, because he'll go to Charlotte, and I imagine he'll go to Charlotte. And if he gets off on a good start, and we'll say Nicky Lopez is doing Nicky Lopez things, or Braden Shumake isn't really cutting it, then I think he's okay. We understand kind of what this season is, right? It's kind of like a rebuild, whatever they want to call it, retool, rebuild. It's kind of seems lost. So I would give him the opportunity, or give Sosa an opportunity, but they don't seem inclined to give Sosa one. So I would hope that, you know, Popeye could at least break through and be given the reins to see, like, hey, this job's open. Take it. It's yours if you can take it. So
it seems like it would be that time. You know, I think that's what I kind of, you know, with how strange second base has been for the Chicago White Sox, because it's just never been properly addressed, and they've tried different guys, and this has been going on for a long, long time. I thought, like, if any time, this would be it, to just go win the job. But I guess, based off what you're saying, like, if you're not given the opportunity, and there's something, like, if you're just butting heads, or a manager or an organization just doesn't like what they see, like, I don't know what else you can do then.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to break through when you're not even given the chance to swing a bat, you know? Yeah. So, like, you know, you have to be given the opportunity. So hopefully, at least with, if I am at, you know, Lenin in Charlotte and Jose in Charlotte or Birmingham, wherever they start, hopefully if they are performing, they're actually given a legitimate opportunity. Because I know Pedro doesn't want to sacrifice major league wins for development, but, you know, maybe in this case, it's worth seeing what you have in some of these guys over some roster filler, which is essentially what most of the roster, the major league roster, kind of is. In a sense, though, I will say, like, I like what they did in that regard compared to previous seasons, where it was just like, we have nobody else. Like, these rookies, whether they're ready or not, have to play because we have nothing. It's now they seem to be forcing them to win the job. So it's kind of on them. Okay, like, you can look up the depth chart. There's nobody in front of you, really. So your performance, what you do, will guide you, or it'll help you or hurt you. So it's the only thing holding you back is you. So hopefully some strong play in the minors force them to make decisions and give these guys legitimate opportunities this summer.
That's a good way of saying it. Good way of looking at it. Hello to Howard. Thank you so much for jumping in. Hope to see you at the ballpark. Hope to see a lot of people at the ballpark, especially opening day. I'll be roaming around. Lot B is, you know, Sydney talked up. I mean, Lot B is a place to be. You know, lots of tailgates going on always before, after. As there are, you know, all throughout the ballpark. But it seems like Lot B has just been a favorite as of the last few seasons or so. Want to stay with prospects for a little bit, and then I want to talk and get your kind of thoughts on the Cease Hall before we get into what kind of the pitching is looking like right now heading into opening day. You talked about, you know, in previous seasons, you know, the Sox will rush guys. They rushed Colas. I don't think he was ready to be the right fielder for the Chicago White Sox at that time. They've got a penchant for doing that because they seem to not have a real plan in place. They don't properly address certain positions, and guys have to maybe play out of position or play at a level maybe that they're not ready. And that's a bad showing. And then there's just this domino effect. Colson Montgomery, Brian Ramos, you know, those are names that you're going to hear a lot as Sox fans start consuming this 2024 season, because that's like the next wave, along with guys like Schultz and others. you want to do it the right way. You know, you don't want to rush people. You know, do you see that path where Colson Montgomery is playing this year for the White Sox?
I mean, I think like the opportunity is there for him to take it. I think they'll be cautious with it because going even with Colson, he's endured some injury issues to kind of the last couple seasons. So he hasn't played a full season yet in the minor leagues and affiliated professional baseball. So him displaying health, just kind of doing what he does at the plate, you know, controlling the zone, you know, if he can start tapping into more of that power potential. I don't know if they said if he's going to start in Charlotte or in Birmingham. I mean, it's reasonable for him to go back to Charlotte and just kind of prove it because it's not a lot of games that he's played there. That's like, he's been in the organization for a few years now, but it's, you know, maybe six, I don't know the exact amount of games, but it's not a lot that he has under his belt in Double A. So he could still use some seasoning there, in my opinion. And with, you know, with given the state of the team, like if they want to do this thing of building culture, the right winning culture way, have all of your top guys go to Birmingham, play together, build this culture, camaraderie with one another, and like start to win, try to win, learn how to win. This is kind of what they're preaching. So what better way to do this is than have everybody go to one spot and kind of ideally, not that this would be the case for everyone, but like ideally move up the ranks together. You know, have the guys, your Colson, Ramos, Caro, you know, have them all go up to Charlotte at the same time, if that's how it plays out. So I mean, I think if everything breaks right, like maybe they call him up in September as like a little cup of coffee thing. I don't know if that's necessary. You know, it's really my thing with Colson, be healthy, play the full season. I think the talent will kind of push its way through, you know, force its way through. He's a good ball player. He's just got to stay on the field.
Yeah, there's going to be a hunger. There's going to be a thirst, whatever you want to call it, for guys like that. Fans are going to want to see that this season at 35th and Shields because of the way the actual product is going to be. You know, it's like, what's the future? Hey, you know, why not give this guy a shot? But they've got to be ready for a lot of different reasons. And I like what you talk about, you know, having all these guys at Birmingham. Yeah, you know, why not play together, develop, get that chemistry? There was a lot made, you know, this past weekend on Twitter X, which is not the best place to have your baseball conversations or any really solid conversations. Have them with people you trust, you know, in good back and forths. But things were getting thrown around about something that Chuck Garfine was mentioning with kind of like culture and how that was a problem with, you know, that last season and lack of chemistry. And there's certain guys that have been brought in that, again, you know, aren't glamorous. They weren't eye-popping moves this offseason, but they could improve the culture and the TWTW, which for those that are younger fans that are listening to this podcast and you're like, why in God's name does he keep saying TWTW? It stands for The Will to Win, made popular by the legend Hawk Harrelson, who had that seat in the booth in the broadcasting booth for many, many years and before Jason Benetti, but he would talk about that. So I kind of say it tongue in cheek, but Chuck brought it up. And I, from the things that I've read and heard, and it seems like things were really messy with the Sox. It might've been for a couple of years. Do you, as a fan, you know, do you say, oh, well, you know what? I think a good chemistry, a good culture, a good, like, for guys to bond and for things to be positive, like that can produce successful baseball. Wins can, you know, can come from a complete culture turnaround.
Yeah. You know, Chuck took a lot of flack on the, over the weekend here for touching on the point of his podcast that he had regarding the culture. That's kind of the big, you know, the changing of the culture and how it was mishandled, right? I mean, Grandal was like who they want to lay the blame on for that. So I think with them pumping this out, trying to change this message on building this properly to have everyone, you know, like each other. Sorry, Don, I have to use like in this sentence here. But you want everybody to enjoy being in the clubhouse with one another. So them emphasizing this with the team not being good, with all of the issues we all saw from watching this team and watching corpse ball out on the field, where it looked like everyone was disinterested, that nobody wanted to be there. I mean, you had players like Luis Robert swinging the bat one-handed in Baltimore because he was just having to play injured. There was nobody else, you know, building this culture of accountability, you know, all these buzzwords Pedro wants to use. I think with Getz being the former player, players seem to appreciate that. They seem to back that sort of stance that he knows what they go through on a day-to-day basis. He knows what's important in the clubhouse over some Ivy League lawyer. But Kenny was there too at this time.
Yeah.
He's a former player. He was a major leaguer. So that's like the part of the disconnect there of how they didn't seem to care about any of the issues that were readily apparent, but Chris Getz is trying to fix them. Like, I hope that.
Well, I've heard that, you know, there might be more respect for Chris Getz because he played the game, you know, and that is what it takes for some players to maybe believe in, listen to what this guy's trying to do. You know, yeah, I think we've all heard like Grandal's name, TA, you know, it's just things just weren't clicking. Whatever was going on, it was something that either Pedro didn't envision, wasn't given a heads up to. It materialized during the season. He didn't know how to get things on track. He might, you know, he didn't have the managerial resume, of course, for maybe to get that respect from players. They're like, who are you? I'm not listening to you. I think there were just a ton of issues going on, and I'm sure even in people's personal lives, and it trickled into their play. So I do believe that, you know, chemistry is helpful, of course, and you want to go after guys that could be good clubhouse guys. I mean, Hanser Alberto was supposed to be an amazing clubhouse guy. He was supposed to change everything, and we saw what happened with that last year. So obviously, it's not always 100%. You know, they try to find guys that can mesh, that can fit. You also have to go after premium talent. You've got to play at the top of the free agency. You've got to bring in ball players. You know, you've got to get that. And then make sure you've got that balance. And that's a tough job. And it's not going to happen overnight. And I think Chris Getz has a ton on his plate, and it's been on his plate, you know, since he took the job, and trying to change everything top to bottom, how things have been happening with the Chicago White Sox. Building fans' trust back is another. And so again, the things that he has said over the last few days, especially on this Sunday, you know, is kind of camp ramps up. Hey, I love that you're saying it. Now show me, Let's see it play out this season. Okay. I'm looking for better baseball. I'm looking for fundamentally sound baseball. I'm looking for competent baseball. I don't think that's too much to ask, but we haven't had it in a while here with our White Sox. Dylan Cease, no longer a member of the Chicago White Sox. That I felt like was happening. Maybe it was going to string out until the trade deadline, but I didn't think he was going to end the season in a White Sox uniform. Getz was asked on a possible Cease extension, and Getz said, we would have loved to have Dylan Cease for longer than 2 years, but it wasn't realistic to be able to keep him in a White Sox uniform. So not really answering the question. And if anybody's been following the White Sox long enough, like, they just don't pay for pitching in that regard. They don't. They might one day if the organization looks a little bit different, ownership looks a little different, they have a different mindset of how they want to invest, but they don't do that. They just do not go after pitching on a free agent market. They don't re-sign their pitching, except for a John Danks many years ago. So you've got a rotation right now that's Garrett Crochet, it's Soroka, it's Flexen, it is Nick, is Nastrini. I'm missing one guy too, I think, on this five-man spot, but you know, they could surprise people. This pitching could surprise people. What I worry about, Steve, is they just don't have the body of work. You know, I feel like there's going to be guys that will definitely be on, you know, some sort of leash like Garrett Crochet. And there's other guys that are bouncing back from injuries that I don't know if they know how long they can go and what they've got in the tank to last an entire season. So there's absolutely going to have to be more arms that are going to be, we're going to need to get starts out. But how are you feeling about the starting rotation as we march towards opening day?
The starting rotation is definitely a roll of the dice for me, because with Garrett Crochet as your opening day starter, Garrett Crochet hasn't pitched more than 65 innings, I want to say, since 2019. So I suppose this is the time to figure out whether or not he can cut it as a starter. You should have been doing it back in 2021, but here we are. He's not going to be able to pitch like starters' workloads. It's just not a feasible option. So you're going to have somebody piggyback and eat these innings behind him. Like, I think if Garrett Crochet can get to 85 to like 100-ish innings pitched this season, right? That seems to be a good amount given where his innings base was and where he, you know, where it's coming from, where you're trying to get it to. Then Kopech coming out, going to the bullpen. I know we're going to touch on that probably in a bit. Eric Fetty, who knows that what that experience is going to be like. I mean, KBO MVP, but I think Chris Flexen was also a dominant overseas. I don't know if he was necessarily KBO at one point, but you know, he was over there, pitched well, came here, came back, pitched okay, and then has been not great. The rotation has just a lot of question marks, and I feel they're for these, we'll call them more replacement level options. Yeah. I feel the leash will be, or the plug will be pulled pretty quickly on those guys. Nastrini will obviously have some length in there, as again, this is assuming, right? We're assuming he cracks the rotation here, because they haven't really
right.
Pedro gave a vague answer on, you know, well,
Pedro,
we don't
was
know.
Vague. Get out of here.
Oh, I know. God. We don't know. Maybe we do. Wow. We'll find out. So okay, fine. So assuming Nastrini's in the rotation, he'll have, unless he's absolutely getting torched, you know, consistently, I think he'll get the run to endure mistakes this year. But I mean, they're going to have to react quickly, because if guys just aren't cutting it and they have some other options, like these guys, they're going to need innings. I think the bullpen will actually be a bit more reliable given some of the arms that they have in there.
Let's talk bullpen. I'm excited about Nastrini, and I'm really excited about Crochet, you know, for a lot of things that you mentioned, and the fact that he wanted to be in the starting rotation. They obviously monitored him in the offseason. They started talking about Crochet like when camp started in mid-February, and it was a little odd. You're mentioning Crochet in the starting rotation based on his resume, really? But, you know, that's where we're at. He wanted it, and he pitched well in spring training. I saw him in person. You know, we all saw any video of that outing against the Dodgers. Small sample size, I get it, but that's all you really have to work with, you know, from spring training. And when he got the ball, he delivered. I don't think he even walked anybody. Last time I checked, it was a low amount. I mean, he was throwing with consistent accuracy, and his velocity was up there. So he is going to be fun to watch on opening day. How long he goes, two, three, I don't know, but there will be an innings limit on him. Bullpen, Michael Kopech relegated to the bullpen. He's pitched out of the bullpen with some success this spring. 101 miles an hour, I think, is what I saw recently. He's back, right? Or is he just pitching angry and on fire? And I'm just going to show everybody what I've got here. It doesn't really mean much. It's the spring. And then once we head back to Chicago, are we going to get a different version of Michael Kopech? We'll discuss in just a second. But you got Jordan Leisure. Happy for this guy. He's been exciting this spring. He'll be a fun guy to watch. He hasn't thrown in the majors, but he's in the closer conversation. Yeah, there's also obviously a closer by committee that they could go. Brebbia, Wilson, who came over in the C steal, Garcia, Hill, Banks, other names to look at. Michael Kopech, I wanted it to work out for him as a starter, as a fan, because he was the big one, like Moncada, Kopech 1A, 1B, I guess, and coming back from the Chris Sale deal. Me as a former pitcher, I loved it. I was like, this is going to be our ace. He is going to be an anchor to our rotation for years. Obviously, we're sitting here talking in late March 2024, still not know what we've got for Michael Kopech for a variety of different reasons. Now, if this is his role, and at the end of the day, he's a bullpen guy, and he's going to be confident, solid, successful bullpen guy, great. If that's what he wants and he's comfortable and life is good and we finally figured it out, it's just amazing to me that the starter thing couldn't work out. But if he is nails out of the bullpen, do we see him back in the rotation, especially with all these question marks and issues that you kind of talked about with what the current rotation could provide?
I mean, I think it's a reasonable option given the lack of options or the lack of ready arms that they may want to promote. I mean, I guess this could even touch on some of the other minor league guys that could be interesting. Like if Jake Eater proves he's ready, he could just come straight up from Birmingham if that's where he's at. But he gets to come straight up if he's showing he's ready, if they need an arm. But if Kopech's doing it out of the bullpen on a regular basis and he's pumping 101, 102, like all those hype videos that we were getting, rebuild 2.0 when he's in the weight room or he's at a driveline throwing the weighted ball,
right, whatever.
That thing was, 110. Yeah. Like if he's just doing this consistently again out of the bullpen, like the corn game when he's out there showing the fire and passion and, striking dudes out and his slider, that breaking pitch is working again.
Yeah.
Maybe they just leave him there and try to capitalize on Kopech as, we'll say, maybe he's the high leverage reliever closer type and just try to sell off.
Yes.
This is his ultimate value. Like,
yep.
We couldn't fix him as we thought he was a starter. He kind of showed he was. We couldn't fix him to this, but we know he's a dominant reliever. Here's this year, this current showing. Maybe they just try to sell that off because he still has some control and teams would be interested in that. They always look for arms. And I mean, I wouldn't hate to see him back in the rotation. I thought given the state of the team and, the potential that he has and has displayed even in the majors, that it would make sense. But I think Brian Bannister, the pitching czar, I heard him on a previous podcast. I know I mentioned this too with Danny and Ian, that Brian Bannister viewed Kopech when they drafted him as a high leverage reliever type. So I think they kind of, again, this is all just a theory I have.
Interesting.
I think they gave him one last shot to show he could kind of cut it together as a starter. Spring didn't. It wasn't going. It wasn't working. We saw that. He was having problems. So I think they said, if it doesn't work, you're going to the bullpen. And yeah, I get him not being happy about it. I wouldn't be either. You think you're a starter.
It's a mind coaster. The back and forth, it's been going on obviously for a while with him. And I think he's had some stuff going on personally. And I just wanted to see a healthy Michael Kopech. And I wanted to see him be able to do what he wants to do, you know, like control the baseball. His pitches are working. I wanted to see the best version of him. And maybe to your point, maybe we get the best version. He is comfortable out of the bullpen. And he is an asset at the trade deadline. And it's like, you know what? For what we're able to get from him, we're not going anywhere as a team. But there are some teams that are going to give us some crazy value for a Michael Kopech because of what he has done out of the bullpen. And that's what teams in contention need. Yeah, it'll be fascinating for me just to watch, you know, following this guy and how that goes. We're going to start wrapping up. Steve, it's been awesome having you aboard. Pat, obviously, on assignment. I know there's some folks joining a little late. John mentioned, you know, Pat not with us this week. He should be back next week. But Steve, you might know him as Sleepy Harold on Twitter X, a contributor for Future Sox for a while now. Nice of you to stop on by. We're going to be at opening day. I know there's so many other folks, Ian, Danny, James, there'll be others from the Future Sox family. And I know there'll be a lot of people at opening day. I think it'll start filling up. The weather's supposed to be nice. I think people waiting maybe for some of those tickets to drop down a little bit more. But I think you'll see that thing maybe three quarters filled, which is still kind of laughable. That's kind of where we're at, you know. It's a holiday. Baseball is back. We're just days away from our Chicago White Sox getting back at it against the Detroit Tigers. So we'll leave you with some Pedro Grifol quotes of the week. I got a couple for you. I've got one that was pretty positive and one that was really bizarre. So here we'll go with the positive one. I don't have a message to fans, Pedro Grifol said recently. I don't think they want one. They want to see us go out and play. And I say that because if I'm a fan, I don't want to hear it. I want to see it. And that is where I'm at, 100%. I couldn't agree with him more. That might have been written by somebody and given to him to read. But if it was from him, good on him. That's a solid quote to head into the season. We're done with the lip service stuff. You know, you've talked it up once again in the offseason along with Getz. Let's see it now. Let's absolutely see it. And I know it's going to be clouded because there aren't going to be that many wins, but I'm looking at the type of baseball you play. You know, the team that you've tried to put together, this new identity and culture and all this other stuff, this nonsense. Like, how are they playing? What's the style of play that you've cultivated? How has that changed? What have you learned from last year, if anything? So we'll see about that. Here's the one that, you know, as we wait for the opening day roster, we don't have a clear picture, but it seems like Pedro Grifol might. However, his quote was kind of as clear as mud. We're already done or close to done. And what I mean by close is you never know what can happen by opening day. Grifol said, we feel pretty good about our camp and the roster going to Chicago. So I don't know. I don't know what can happen in the next few days, Steve. Maybe there's something behind the scenes that we don't know about. You know, we mentioned the Stassi injury, and that might change things. Maybe there's other lingering injuries. You know, maybe I don't know. They're looking at matchups in that first series. They might change some things at the last minute, but I don't think the White Sox have these crazy X factors that they're hiding from the Tigers or other people. And saying, wait till they hear about what we've put together. Wow, it's going to catch them off guard. So those are your two Pedro Grifol quotes of the week. Thoughts on any of those, Steve?
The first one was actually good. That makes sense. Like, yeah, we're all sick of hearing you talk, and have nothing to back it up. We had enough of that last offseason. So, yeah, you know, I was golf clapping while you were reading. You know, golf clap for you, Pedro. That was good. And then the second quote was more of what I'm accustomed to from Pedro, very Boylan-esque.
He wrote that one himself, yeah.
I was going to say that was a more of a word salad of just I'm going to throw this all together here. And yeah, okay. We were talking about it. This is a 60-ish win season. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to catch somebody off guard by sending Braden Shumake back to Charlotte and having Danny Mendick on the roster. Like, you're not.
How will the Tigers prepare for that? Yeah.
Yes. How will they ever recover from not having known? Were they left for Danny Mendick scouting report back in Lakeland,
Yeah. Oh man, we need to get that emergency. we got to get that back up here. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Look, we have fun with Pedro Grifol. He's got a lot on his plate here, but hey, from what I saw last year and the fact that I didn't even think he should have been the manager in the first place, I hold him to a pretty high standard, and I think all fans should. I got to see something different. I absolutely need to see it. The organization should be saying that too. And whatever kind of relationship Chris Getz has with Pedro Grifol, you got to put that to the side. If you're not seeing that this is the guy you want in place moving forward, as we think this team, can be more successful in 2025 and beyond, especially if they spend their money wisely in the offseason. So, a lot of things to follow. Steve, thank you so much, man, again, for jumping on. Please let us know where we can find all the stuff that you do.
Sure. Thank you for having me again, Nick. Future Sox, futuresox.net, or go on the old X machine at @Sleepy_Herald_. I know we're all working on the positional prospect list, and then we'll have affiliate previews coming out. Follow the @FutureSox account on the X machine Twitter. And I mean, I know Ian's constantly pumping videos, clips, whatever all day. And especially with the minor league season kicking off, Friday, as well, I'm sure it's Charlotte. So we'll have a lot of content, baseball's back. So, minor league stuff will be flowing from Future Sox.
If you haven't been following Future Sox, this is the time. I mean, this is absolutely the time to check out what they've got going on. It's amazing the work that's done. And this is what we're kind of looking at. Of course, I'll be following, the product at 35th and Shields, our Chicago White Sox, but I'll be keeping an eye on, the youngsters, what they're doing, what's in the pipeline, so to speak, and Future Sox does it so well. Steve Hasman, absolute pleasure. Pat Hester should be back. Hopefully it's not sacrilegious. We're going to be planning on doing an episode Easter Sunday in the evening, 9:15 as usual. Hopefully the spiral ham and the deviled eggs are settled, and you can join us as we chop up the first series against the Tigers and what comes after for our White Sox. Find this podcast absolutely everywhere you find your podcasts. And please subscribe to the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Join us in the comments, as so many have, and we appreciate it, doing it Sunday nights at 9:15. For Steve, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox!